Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Inspiring Sports Stories with Tim Gossage on SEN. Thanks to Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Over the next hour, we're going to speak to a young man who is making huge inroads in sports management with a big focus on football. And he had a career which started junior footballer and much touted as a top 10 draft pick. His name is Andrew McDougall, thanks to Baron O'Day, because the little things are everything. Dukes, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me on, Goss.
Oh, mate, we're going to go back in a moment, all the way back to the much touted junior career of yours and being, well, at one stage touted as the number one draft pick, but of course injury curtailed that for a best part, and then take you on the journey through your Eagles, your Bulldogs and your WAFL career. But right now, you... Actually, to our listeners, your office is based right next door to where we're doing this interview. That's where Corporate Sports are based, of course, the Corporate Sports Australia, based here at Optus Stadium. How are the new digs?
Mate, really good. It's nice being next to you, Goss, and seeing a lot of different people come through the office, and just saw Scotty come through, and Hayes is always walking around having about five lattes a day. So it's great being close to Optus, and also when the players are playing and training, that's great. So when Brisbane come over and have a captain's run, we can get out there and speak to Charlie Cameron and see the players out there or any interstate players, and they can come through, have a meeting, and then we can go up to the Canfield for a coffee or something like that as well.
Yeah, it's got it all here, and you're guaranteed parking too, Dougs, as well. So I just want to, we're going to not just focus on corporate sports, but just tell us a bit about the company structure. We know that Colin Young has now moved to Melbourne. Tell us about the structure of corporate sports and what the focus is on corporate sports. Who's at the helm? And where, I mean, as much as AFL players are at the forefront of most of your management, you do have other players from other codes?
Yeah, we do. We manage Courtney Bruce as well. She's had a successful year.
Wow, you got rid of her quickly. She was captain of the Fever for a long time, championship player. Now she's gone.
Not that popular at the moment with the Fever, but no, they're great. And I think they'll bounce back and have a great year. It was just really a time thing with Courtney. She was getting to that point where if you didn't move now and take the challenge and go over there and have a crack over east, I think she's always had a little bit of a desire to get over and see what it's like in a different state. And Sunshine Lightning have got a few other Diamonds players as well, and just a fresh start, really. So that was great. And I also managed Rudy Ellis.
Another one who left and went back.
So she
oh,
left.
Hey, what's going on here, Dukes?
Mate, I love the Fever, but you've got to look after the client, and you just got to work with them and see what they like to do first and foremost. So Rudy's in Melbourne living with Tim, and she's at the Vixens now. So smooth transition for her, but she's only on a one-year deal at the moment, and just see how she enjoys it.
So just as I go back to my original question, this is the structure of the company and where do you sit in that? Because, I mean, I don't want to, you're almost like the apprentice. But now you're very much at the top of the tree, Dukes. Just tell us a bit about how the company Corporate Sports works.
So Paul Nash is the owner of Corporate Sports Australia. And so, as you said, we're based here at Optus. Colin's moved to Melbourne, so he'll be there, still involved with Corporate Sports, which is great. And we've also got Charlie Morfess, who's Dixie Marshall's son.
Yes.
He's come on board. He's been with us for a year. He's an accredited agent.
Andrew McDougall is our guest, of course, in Inspiring Stories, Sports Stories. Thanks to Baron O'Day, because the little things are everything. We'll get more on the player management. I want to go back to your own junior career. Much touted in regards to draft. Didn't always start that way. I mean, you're over the sort of South Perth way.
Yep.
Tell us a bit about your junior pathway.
Yeah, so I played at South Perth Junior Footy Club. That's the junior club I was at. We were actually, the alignment back then was different. So we were in the East Fremantle zone. So all the development squads that we were leading up to in that next year was actually East Fremantle zoning. So I was invited down to train. I think there was 10 or so players from South Perth. We all went down there, trained at East Fremantle. I don't know what sort of system they had. They had about 60 kids running around doing handball drills, and you're trying to find your feet a bit, and you're really young, and you're hoping you don't get cut. But I remember I got cut in the 35. I think they were started at 60, made the first cut, then they cut it down to 35, and I missed that one. So
That's pretty devastating, isn't it?
It is as a young kid. I still remember it quite significantly. Like, it's the first time you almost rejected it, you know, at your sport, and you sort of feel, oh, you've got to get back on the horse. And I thought, try and use this as motivation. So at 14, I did a lot of running and beach runs, and a family friend of mine, he was a triathlete, so I tagged on the back of him for some beach runs. I got super fit and came back for that pre-season at South Perth and won the best player in the district. So I won that award, played in the ruck instead of in the forward line, and they changed the zones that year. So then we were aligned with Perth Footy Club. So everything left side of the bridge was now Perth Footy Club up to Armidale. So we were down at Perth, the Perth Demons.
And did you get picked eventually?
Made that squad.
Yeah, nice.
Michael Johnson was there.
Oh, yes.
So Jono was there. And Stephen Armstrong. They were the two boys that were the most talented in that group. So we... all got selected for that.
I want to go now straight to, we'll talk more about your football career after our first break, but I want to talk to you about you being touted as a potential number one draft pick. You now deal with potential number one draft picks as part of your job. Back then, Dukes, when everyone's talking about it, of course, and everyone's heaping praise on you, he's going to be the next big thing. What's that like for a young man back then? How did you deal with it?
There is a lot of pressure. Back then, now the draft's changed slightly, so you're a little bit older going in. So I was year 12 at Wesley, and at the end of the Wesley year, you're into the draft and you go straight from school to AFL. At the moment with the age gap change, so a lot of kids have a year out and they go to uni, they get a bit of life experience and then they go in. But there's still obviously some boys in Melbourne that go from school into the draft. But I suppose having a lot of pressure early, you know, everyone's saying, oh, you're going to go number 4 or 5 or 1 or 2 and all this. And you hear a lot of the outside noise, but as a young kid, you're just excited. You just want to be drafted. So you're just hoping, hearing your name being talked about in that early, 5 to 10 range or 1 to 10 range, you think, well, I'm probably going to go. So you're sort of trying to plan a bit more for that and what it would be like to play with your idols and your heroes. And
how did you cope at school with your mates?
At school, it was fine. I think I had a good group of mates that were really grounding, and I just enjoyed playing football at Wesley, down there with Marshy and
Sean.
With Sean, yep.
Is he a good player?
He was very good. Yeah, he was in the East Fremantle development squad, so I think he actually made the cut.
Well, Mitchell had a choice. I think Mitch had to decide to be between playing for South Fremantle. Pretty sure I stand corrected on that. Or he was came through with Anthony Morabito, and obviously one went one way and the other went to cricket. I think Mitch pulled the right rein.
Yeah, well, I know Sean, there were a few clubs looking at Sean during, because we were going through a similar phase where Sean was, if we pull it back slightly, we were both in year 10. I was playing, lucky enough to play first 18, so in the year 12 team for football, and Sean was playing first 18 for cricket. So we were both playing 2 or 3 years up. But Sean was actually, I was just getting a kick where Sean was breaking all the records. So you go to assembly Monday morning, they'd say, oh, another record broken, Sean Marsh, year 10. And then I was just happy to get a game. But Sean came in and played a few games as a year 10 as well. So there's both of us. And a year above us was Mark Coghlan, who went to Richmond.
Fantastic player.
And Scott Stevens was a year above us as well. So we had those two guys that we looked up to and were setting a standard. And then there were a few really good year 12 players that didn't really play AFL, but they were good waffle players and so forth. So, yeah, it was a bit like that. There's a lot of different sporting people at the school, and just kept focused on that.
And we'll talk about your journey into AFL after the break. Of course, recruited at pick number 5 in the 2000 draft from the Perth Football Club to the West Coast Eagles. Andrew McDougall is our inspiring sports story. Thanks to Bower and O'Day, because the little things are everything.
This is Inspiring Sports Stories with Tim Gossage on SEN. Thanks to Bower and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything.
Andrew McDougall is our guest in Inspiring Sports Stories. Thanks to the team at Bower and O'Day, because the little things are everything. So we've set you up to be drafted. You went pick 5 in the 2000 draft, taken by the West Coast Eagles. Did you think you were going to go to the West Coast Eagles? Had everything set yourself up for that? Where did you think you were going to land?
The draft was a little bit different back then, because we had the lead-in. So there was myself, Aidan Parker, Clancy Rutherford, Daniel Kerr. We all made the All-Australian team. And that was a team that went to Ireland. So that was one of the last teams we went and played in Ireland. So we played the Gaelic rules.
At what age was this?
So that was at 16.
What a huge experience.
Oh, it was unbelievable. It was still one of the best memories I have in my football career and life journey. And it was just 2 weeks, Kevin Sheen was running the program, so Shifter, And we went over to Ireland and met some great families, great people. Chris Judd was on our tour. So Juddy was my roommate to start off. So first 7 days I was with Chris Judd and got to know him. And
did you think then?
I knew he was going to be very good, but maybe not that good. But I thought, because there were a few other players, Richard Cole, I don't know if you remember him. He was unbelievable. He went to Essendon, but he probably only played a few years. And there was two or three others. There was actually a player, one or two, that didn't get drafted, and I thought, oh, God, they're amazing players. But Chris Judd was a standout. Judd and Kerr were probably the two best still, and they'd compete on the beep test and all that. So we had a camp in Canberra where we all stayed together first. So we had 2 weeks out at the AIS with all the different athletes, and it was actually really cool walking around, and you see all these, you know, guys, archery and netball and soccer, and they're all running laps around the track, and Chris Judd's doing the beep test, and it's like, wow.
They probably thought you guys have been footy players at the Institute. Probably you were like the imposters, really.
Yeah, we were a little bit.
We didn't think the Institute, I think we all started out, the Institute was designed not for football.
Yeah, exactly.
And all of a sudden.
Yep, because they didn't do too much inside because they had an oval out the back, and so we did a lot of training out back,
sure.
And all the recruiters would come down. So they'd sit around the oval and watch us train and play, and we'd go inside and do some testing, but it was basically outdoors where all the other athletes are either swimming or playing basketball and that. But it was actually quite cool staying at the barracks and getting to experience that life. And then from there, went to Ireland and got to gel with those guys for 2 weeks, played over there with guys like Richard Hadley as well. He was the other WA boy, Richard Hadley, so there was five of us. Played at Brisbane in a premiership, I think, after three games.
He did.
And went to Carlton in the end and had a great career. And
came back here and played for East Fremantle.
Played for East Fremantle. Yeah. One of the great men.
Yeah, he is.
Richard. Really got along well with him, and our whole group, I think we were really lucky that year. We just had a great bunch of guys, really great people, and we ended up winning. We won the first game, lost the second game, and the last game was a grudge match versus Ireland in one of their hometowns, and we played, and we just won, and Juddy played amazing that game, and Richard Hadley, he had a bit of a tough game because he came on as a tagger, and the bloke kicked a goal immediately, and he came off, and it was like, that was it, and you saw he sort of, you know, joked about it himself.
It was international rules.
International rules.
Yeah, wow. How'd you go with the round ball?
Not too bad. Like I actually didn't mind the round ball. I think I played full forward for the game. It depended on where you got picked. So if you got picked as a fullback or with Hads, he was played a bit off the bench, or he played as a tagger and he was naturally a really good half forward and a good mid. So he didn't get as much game time. But some players were a little bit luckier where they got picked, and then there was some of the goalie for a while as well. So I think Shuffle was the goalie for a bit. So, yeah, it was a bit of a mixed bag. So it was more, back then it wasn't so much to showcase the talent. It was more just to try and beat Ireland, experience the tour, what it's like together. And it was absolutely unbelievable.
So how did you get to West Coast, that pick number five? Because I stand corrected on this, but I think I read very much that you were expected to go pick it. Well, you were being talked about as a possible number one draft pick, but you got injured.
Yeah, so coming off that Ireland tour, I won the Ron Barassi medal for that tour, which was basically the best player of the tour. And from there, I went and played at Wesley the following week when we came back.
Oh, wow.
Kick six against Aquinas. And I was playing against Quinton Lynch, who was a great player and had a great career, and Daniel Kerr. So it was like Lynch and Kerr. And we had a few other players playing with us. And then I tore my calf the next week. And so it was probably coming off the back of the Ireland, meeting the scouts, training well, playing well in Ireland, playing a good college game. And that was probably it for a bit. And then following week, we played Trinity. I played in the forward pocket and still had a bit of a dodgy calf, and that was my last game. And I sort of had quite a while off after that. Came back and re-tore my calf, and I didn't really play much that year till the end of the year, and came back and played a little bit at Perth Colts under Murray Cooper. Got a few sprays from him in the lead-up after 12 weeks off. And then I only played a couple of games, and then I was into the draft camp where you're meeting all the clubs. And that actually was the first time that I met Nick Riewoldt, because he was over there at the draft camp. And it was the last year they did King of the Pack. And I actually spoke to Drew Peachew about it last night, because Drewy was in King of the Pack, and no one really, I think Drew wasn't, he was a great player, but probably not as, I think he went a bit later in the draft from memory, and Riewoldt, Kaczynski, they were the ones. And so Drew Peachew was in a, they spread it out to four groups. I was in one group, Nick Riewoldt was in another, and Drewy Peachew was in another. And it was just like literally bomb the ball as high as you can and try and mark it. And all the scouts would sit around in the stadium and watch us go for the marks. And Nick Riewoldt clunked basically everything. And I remember Drewy Peachew, that was the first time I saw him, and I was like, wow, he's a great pack marker. Like, he's going to be a good player. And I hadn't heard of him before, but I thought, no, he's going to be a very good forward.
Why did they axe it?
I actually think it's a good thing to see who can pack mark, but I think it was more probably blokes getting injured.
And, yep.
you're trying to push a few of the smaller guys at the front so you could jump on them, that type of thing.
But it's just like being in the schoolyard, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was exactly like the schoolyard.
That's what it's called.
Yep.
So you end up going pick number five. I would love to know what you your day at the draft, that the draft day, because we're going back to 2000. Was it on TV? Were you seeing it online? What was the transition there?
Yeah, so leading up to the draft, I did think that it was a good chance to go to West Coast, just from the conversations that I had with the club.
Who was your manager?
I don't think I had one leading in. I had Paul Connors at the start as well. That was around, I think, my second year from memory. And then had Colin at Corporate Sports as well after that. But yeah, going into the draft, I didn't have anyone because I wasn't sure, where I was going to go. And I think back then it was a little bit different what the manager's roles were. I think the manager's roles initially were contracts, and that was probably about it. Mm. But now it's turned into, as you know, like there's sponsorships, endorsements, life. A lot more life experience and all that as well. So, and the game's changed. So going into that draft, I stayed at home. We just had family and friends around at our house. And I think my sister had the old camcorder. I still got the vision of that. And she was watching us and pick three, pick four, because there was a chance I was going to go to Collingwood. I think they had pick three or four. And once that got through, I thought, oh, I'm going to go to West Coast. How good. I'm going to stay home. And I was so excited because I was a West Coast fan and supported all the guys like Cousins and Matera and Kemp and all that hero era, Djokovic and all those legends of the game. So just to get picked and then you see your name, basically you just see your head come up on the screen and then everyone jumps on you and it's like, oh, my God. And reliving that now as a manager, I still remember that feeling. It's one of the best feelings of your life. And even going through that this year with Colton Thorstrup, sitting there with him and we're at his house and it sort of brings back those fond memories. And I think, oh God, I know exactly how he's feeling and he's nervous and, I just try to make sure that I can give him the best advice and calm him down. And
I love that. I love the home stuff, whether you're seeing it online, they're watching it online or slight delay, or you're seeing them at the gathering and they're all changing shirts and all looking after each other. Everyone just looks happy for everyone.
Yeah, that's right. It's one of those ones where it's a win-win because any AFL club you get to go to is huge and it changes your life within a second. So seeing the look on their faces and knowing that feeling, like going through that with Matt Johnson, that was probably one of the hardest drafts because he probably should have gone in that first round, didn't, was in the studio, got picked first pick the next day and it all worked out well, staying at home and being at Freo. But that initial period is very hard because you are one of the best players leading up to the draft, and you're thinking, well, I should be going around this pick. I'm not.
So I want to give you – so we're going to jump ahead to that because I think that's – you've brought that up yourself, and I like that. So just for our listeners listening, Andrew McDougall, player manager with Corporate Sports Australia, of course, but former player himself. So he was expected to go. He was one of 20 invited or whatever it was to the studio or wherever they were. Whether he was in Perth.
We're at RAC Arena.
Yeah, but he's expected to go in the top 20. He's sitting there with his family, his grandparents and all that sort of stuff, and it was focus, focus, focus. And he didn't get picked.
He didn't go.
What role did you play that night once that draft night closed? And how was he, if you could share some insight?
It was difficult for that period because initially when he got invited to go, he thought, oh, I'm not too sure if I want to do that.
I said to him, mate,
look, at the end of the day, it's your choice. And that's what happened with Colton Thorstrup this year. He just said, look, I'm from Esperance. I've organised something at my house with my family. All the country people are coming up. We had it at Bo's house, the league coach. A lot of Subi boys are going to be there. He said, that's what I want to do. And I didn't have to say anything to him. He just said, bang, that's what I'm doing. I'm not going. And I said, mate, at the end of the day, you've got to be comfortable with it. It's your choice. It's huge to go, but it's also your choice. And with Maddie, he was probably a bit hesitant, but then I think he realised that Erasmus was going and Amos was going and three there might be was really what they wanted. They wanted to have the three players there and on the night. So we knew I thought he was probably going to go around 15, 13, 14, 15, 16, somewhere in there.
When it's going back and back and back and back.
Yeah, he became one of two players and sometimes that does happen in the draft where a lot of clubs will have Matt Johnson as their second choice and they think the player they've got ahead will go.
High emotion. We're going to talk about your career, of course. You made your debut in round 22, 2002. And those interested, you mentioned Richard Colk, 63 games for the Pies and the Bombers. A break. We'll come back and chat with Andrew McDougall about his debut and, again, his football career, which, sadly, was curtailed by injury as well. Thanks to Baron O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
This is Inspiring Sports Stories with Tim Gossage on SEN. Thanks to Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
It's a pleasure to be here because everything is on the line for them, and it's on the line for that man as well, Andrew McDougall, playing his first game this afternoon for the West Coast Eagles, a former Australian underage player who
good size.
Had some time against Ireland and the Eagles' first draft pick in 2000. They took him as the number 5 overall. But a big day for the West Coast Eagles players this afternoon.
That's The Pipe, Dwayne Russell on Fox Footy. Of course, I think there's a little cameo there from Dermot Brereton. That was your debut, round 22 against the Kangaroos in 2002. So you're on the list, you're training. Where were you when you were told you were going to make your AFL debut, and you'd had to sit through the whole year? It was round 22.
Yeah, that's right. I did have a few injuries early on, and coming into the club with some great idols of mine and heroes like Jacko and Peter Matera, Dean Kemp, Ben Cousins. It was just an absolute honour, really, to be able to play with those guys and train with those guys, and especially your first year, you're just soaking it all up. And that's another thing I get to see with guys like Colton Thorstrup. He says, "Oh, we just had a coffee with Petrarca today," and you know, all that type of stuff. And it's amazing. But yeah, for myself, picked for that second last game. I think it was before the elimination final against Essendon. It's the best moment you could possibly have. But it was actually a smooth introduction for me because it was played in Canberra. And, you know, as a young player, you're thinking about, oh, the, you know, there's going to be a huge crowd. How am I going to concentrate? You're thinking of all these things. But being in Canberra, there was about 2,000 people there. So it wasn't too bad at all. It was almost like a waffle atmosphere. So I still remember my first game and Judgy.
Don't undersell it, mate. There was 11,613.
Okay. All right. So a bit more than I expected, but had a similar vibe to it, the lead up and everything like that. But, yeah, I remember my name being called out as going to debut, and I still remember seeing my name on the board and my opponent was Glenn Archer. And I thought, okay, and then they said if once you've finished, he's come off you, you probably get Mick Martin. So they'll be your two opponents for the day. And I was scrawny little 18-year-old thinking, I think they're probably, after Woosher, they're probably the two toughest guys in the game.
Did they get in your ear?
They actually didn't, and I think that's probably one of the things you learn when you play football is that the ones that are constantly in your ear and hitting you sometimes aren't the toughest blokes all the time, but the guys like Glenn Archer, I remember him running towards me and I thought, oh, he's gonna, you know, rough me up, I'm 18-year-old kid, and he just didn't. He just arm on the shoulder, that was it, mate, have a good game, and we were away. But yeah, and same with Mick Martin. I thought he came down, he looked like a, you know, he's just come out of the UFC or the something like that, and he's come down and he was fine.
And you won.
We ended up winning that game. Yep. I still remember my first kick. Peter Matera, I was about 70 metres out from goal, and I've run up to sort of the contest. Peter Matera is running towards the boundary line, and two North Melbourne players just, my player left me and came off and ran towards him, and Peter Matera is about to run over the boundary line. He's just double-handed, whacked it back to me. The ball's hit me in the chest, and I've gone, oh, you know, like totally shocked, grabbed the footy, and just kicked it as hard as I could and as long as I could just to get it off me, just to, you know, first kick of AFL, get that one out of the way. And I didn't see Phil Matera was in the pocket by himself, and the ball's drifted, and he's marked it, and he's ran around his man, he's kicked a goal.
Oh, it's past Dukes.
Exactly. And I listened back to it on the, you know, because your first game, you're so excited, you watch it when you get home, and it goes, oh, great vision. You know? No vision at all, just pure luck.
We're speaking with Andrew McDougall. Thanks to Barron today, because the little things are everything. So 38 games for West Coast, and then you ended up at the Bulldogs for 5 games. I'd love to know, let's just speed forward. How did you end up at the Bulldogs?
It was in the premiership year for West Coast, so 2006. I played a handful of games that year, and West Coast were basically, I think they won 17 straight. I think it was. They went on a massive winning streak, and I couldn't get back in the side. I injured my shoulder round 2, and I was in the waffle, and I was playing waffle football for those, I think, 17 games. Came into the team once.
Who did you play for in those days?
I was with Perth Footy Club.
Oh, so in those days, you just went back to your waffle
club? Back to your waffle club. Gotcha. Yep, so Sam Butler, Stephen Armstrong, and Damien Atkins and myself were all part of Perth Footy Club. So we actually used to have our own separate meeting, you know, as a, because we thought we're not in the side. So we'd have our own little meeting at a cafe, and we'd, you know, we'd sort of pretend it was a proper meeting, and we'd let one person run it. And it was normally Steve Armstrong. So he always wanted to run the show. As you can see, he's a coach now and going really well. And we'd just, you know, have a coffee. We're really close, but we'd always have to go down together for the for training. So they made you go to training on the Thursday. So we became really part of the fabric down there for a while and enjoyed playing with Perth Footy Club. And Jared Gaylor-Thompson was there, and Scotty Sikirka, and Ross Young era as well.
Sandover?
Sandover medalist. So that was, yeah, a really good experience. Well, we just formed our own little group because we were always going down there for that year because we couldn't get into the side.
But they offered you a one-year deal. And you, did you think then, and this time you probably had a player manager and you were, did the Bulldogs offer you something better than that?
Yeah, I remember I flew over and met Rodney Eade after the year, and him or the club basically said, we'll give you a two-year deal. You're going to play centre-half forward. And sort of the pitch that they gave to me, I thought was really enticing and that I'd be playing every week. So that was probably a bit more appealing than, you still love the club at West Coast and all the players, but I thought that's probably an opportunity for me. I think Quinton Lynch was at West Coast and Gardy and Coxie, and there was a few good players that were probably...
They'd won a flag.
Yeah, they'd won a flag. It was a similar sort of being at Collingwood now in that era and then going, I'll come and play at, you know, another club that's a little bit down the bottom that I could probably get a game in and have an impact. So that was really the basis of my decision. Went to Melbourne. Was really interested to try AFL life in Melbourne as well to see what it was like with all the events going on there and, you know, all the things that you see now going on each year in Melbourne. So it was a bit of a lifestyle change as well. So I enjoyed my time there, but, yeah, it was only for 2 years.
And you played 5 games in 2007. You played the first 2 and then you came back 19, 21, 22. What happened in between 2 and 19?
I was injured for quite a while, unfortunately, but they started moving. I was in the forward line for a while, and Darcy, the big ruckman, he also was playing forward, so they were resting him. He was coming towards the end of his career, and Chris Grant. So I was trying to get a game ahead of...
Played with some good players, didn't you?
Yeah, it was a good era. Yeah, it was
tough era.
A tough era. So Chris Grant was still playing very well, and Brad Johnson. So they had Brad Johnson, Darcy, and Chris Grant, and I was trying to come in and get a game. And that year, in my first year, they drafted in Walsh from Adelaide. It was a full forward for them, and he was then full forward. So trying to get a game in there, and I ended up moving to the back line. So they're moving down to the back line. But once you move to the back line, you know it's...
the next step
exactly.
Is over the fence.
Exactly.
Nice work. We're chatting with Andrew McDougall, of course. You disappeared. Where did you go? Because you then came back and played waffle footy for Subi in 2012-2014, including a premiership.
Yep.
Now Fraser, very short to Brennan, who will run with the footy as the siren goes. And Subiaco, the underdog, has won the 2014 Premiership. Scenes of absolute jubilation. It has been the year of the Lion. Who would have thought at the completion of 2013 that this team would be the Premiers, let alone even be in the Grand Final?
Yeah, what was that like? And how did you end up at Subi?
I went back and played at Perth Footy Club. So I played a few games there and then transitioned to Subi. I actually got a call from Scoey. Who now I manage, Jared Schofield at West Coast, and he basically said, mate, we're looking for a ruckman, do you want to come? And it was quite a short...
Had you retired?
I retired for probably that just 1 year, so I had a year off and basically got the body right, and then I thought to myself, I'm still quite young, I can probably still get a few games out in the waffle and you know, leverage that opportunity, and you're a long time retired. So I got that call from Scoey, and Scoey said, mate, we'd love to have you down here. And I said, okay. And he said, well, you know, talk to the club. We're willing to give you this as a contract. And I said, oh, how about this? And he said, no. He said, this is not a negotiation. Do you want to play at Subi and win a flag or not? And I said, yep, I'll be there. So,
were you into player management at that time?
I just started. So maybe I was a little bit ambitious. Yeah, I was a little bit ambitious with Scully, and he's just gone bang and hit me for 6. So, we got along really well after that. But going down to Subi, they had a great side because they, in that premiership era, they had Rumble and Parksy and Horse. Kyle Horsley, who's coaching down at West Coast, Veerland, DeLucas, Clancy Wheeler, who was a gun as well. So they had a great side and everyone was really up and about.
We're going to take a break and come back. We're going to go post-footy with Andrew McDougall. We're going to find out how you've really got your teeth into being a player manager for some 70 players. Andrew McDougall is our inspiring sports story. 38 games for West Coast, 5 for the Bulldogs, a premiership in the WAFL, very much a touted junior superstar, played for Australia as, of course, in the teenage group over the international rules. Thanks to Barra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
This is Inspiring Sports Stories with Tim Gossage on SEN. Thanks to Barra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Andrew McDougall, our guest. Hope you've enjoyed our chat so far. Thanks to Barra and O'Day because the little things are everything. All righty, let's get our teeth into Andrew McDougall's sojourn. As you mentioned, you're at Subiaco. You're just starting out in the player management space. Who would have thunk it? It's pretty busy. It's an amazing space now with player management. You're looking after lives, families, all sorts of carry on. What is the day-to-day role of a player manager with Corporate Sports Australia?
The day-to-day role varies a lot. There's probably the key things are obviously contracts, contract negotiations, securing those deals for the players so that they've got a long-term career and longevity in the game, because the game's really finite now. The player's career is finite, and you know, any time there could be an injury, anything can happen. They don't play well, you know, all those things that go on in football. So I think getting the AFL contract at the right club is important. We work on the player trades. So Bobby Hill's a good example of being at GWS, and then we traded Bobby to Collingwood, and he's won a Norm Smith medal.
Tried to get him to Essendon the year before?
The year before, it was a real tough year because Essendon were the ones that made the most groundwork for him in the lead-up. Collingwood did make a play a little bit later, and he ended up getting to Collingwood in the end. Yeah. But, yeah, so tool of trade's one thing. The player has the option, so endorsements. But there's a lot of other things now that come into it. Like, you said, the families, the lead-up to the draft. You've got a number of areas where we help them, connect them with the right financial team as well to guide them on their finances, make sure they've got saving their money and buying their first house and people in property and connecting to life after football as well, making sure they're studying and getting a uni degree. A lot of the players now study online. So even Aaron Norton, Tim English, those guys, they're all online studying and working towards a degree. So I sort of see it as a couple of pillars that you want to get going for the player. You want them to have the contract security and get a great contract, a lot of money, and be able to save. And then you've got the second pillar. You want them to save that money and the financial aspect. And then you've also got the off-field, because once they get to 33 or 34, then their career could be over, so you need them to set themselves up for that next phase.
And what's your role post-footy as a player manager? And if they're not playing and there's no value and they're not using the resources needed to play as a footballer, how quickly do you dump them, Dougs, is what I'm asking.
It's a big thing for me to try to stay with them as long as I can, because a lot of players, I'd say there's probably two spaces where there are the players like the Declan Mountfords, Ronan O'Connors, these guys that play for 4 or 5 years in the AFL and they come back. So you're really helping them with their waffle contract, making sure you're supporting them for their next phase of their journey. And I always keep in touch with those guys and, you know, make sure I'm saying good day to them and inviting them in for a coffee and just seeing how they're going with their life. Josh Schoenfeld's came in the other day, had to catch up with him and saw Declan Mountford and all these guys, because there's that phase and then there's the ones that retire. So 33, 34 when they retire. So checking in on them, they've normally got a young family and that might have a business, and just keeping in contact I think is important, because I know from being a player you need to keep that personal touch as you finish football.
If you have 70 players roughly on your books, do you have a ladder?
No.
Like your number one down to 70?
Well, I probably, it depends on the task. I don't have a ladder at all, but I have more priority list. So what is important at the time and what is, you know, things that are urgent that we need to get onto and other things. So contract negotiation obviously takes priority on a lot of things. So if you're dealing with a few clubs or you're going through a trade or leading into a draft, there's probably key moments during the year as well. And then working through sponsorships and things like that. Sometimes they take a few weeks. So it's not necessarily like every day you're getting through every player, but it's more the fact that you need to keep touch points along the journey, but have priorities as well on what the players are trying to achieve out of that year.
Your player welfare is important. If your player and you're the manager gets into a spot of bother, do they ring the manager first? Do they ring the footy club first? What's your advice to them there?
A lot of times I think it's the manager first.
And to say, what do I do now?
Yeah, well, we normally work very closely with the club. So a lot of instances I've had over the journey is where something's happened. It's normally off-season and something's happened in that period.
And you enjoy the off-season, Andrew?
Off-season's not much of an off-season for us, but it's more the fact where if something does happen and it's not the player's fault or it's an unwanted circumstance has come up, the player does need to get on the front foot and speak to the club a lot of the times, because then at least the club's aware. And sometimes they pass over and nothing happens and it all dies down. And other times it does eventuate and it's not great, but the club at least say, okay, the player's given me the respect, he's let me know, rather than the club's going to find out anyway. So the club would rather know 3 days before a media release goes out than backtracking and trying to cover their tracks and so forth. So my normal advice to the players is let me know first and then let and we'll speak to the club as well.
The rule of thumb, and I do a little bit of real estate, but the rule of thumb is you can't take a listing off another agent while they've got a contract. What's it like in player management? Do you try and... Is there an unwritten law or is there a written law in regards to the code of conduct in regards to player managers?
Yeah, there is a bit of a code of conduct. I've got a lot of respect for some of the big agents out there as well, and especially the guys in Melbourne. But normally if a player leaves or, you know, another manager comes in, there's a period there with their AFL players union contract that they sign when they have a manager, is that they pay their fees for the next X amount of years. So, for example, if a player signed a three-year deal and then the next day said, I'm going to Joe Smith, well, for those 3 years, because you initiated the contract and did the contract negotiation, you get paid the percentage of that contract. So the player does have the ability to do that, but it's quite rare nowadays because of the fact there's a lot of people are just more focused on the draft, and you'd rather focus on the players you've got and also the draft and signing new players rather than just trying to snip players from other agents.
Do you seek young players? Are you like a talent scout for like the footy clubs where they go and watch these kids play in PSA footy or country footy or TAC Cup or wherever, Colts or whatever it may be, and you go, I think he might be drafted, and do you contact the parents and go, hey, do you need a player manager and do you have to go in and pitch for it?
Yeah, definitely. A lot of times we go out and watch a lot of PSA footy, a lot of Colts footy, state footy. So we're out and about on the weekends, and a big thing for us is to have that belief that we believe in the player, because if you sign a player that you don't believe in, it's quite hard to sell. So I like to watch the player, make sure I meet the player and the family, get a good connection and make sure that I can push them as hard as I can and help them on their journey. So yeah, identifying the talent is one thing. Speaking to the clubs and they tell you, okay, we're watching this kid or we've had a look at this kid. So you get some intel as you get more experience as an AFL manager, but you also want to see for yourself what that player can do and if you really rate that player.
Where's the ceiling for player management? When does it get... We've seen with a couple of years of the reality show, of course, that, you know, it's a brutal business and there's lots of decisions and you've got to move quick and there's lots of emotion. Where's the ceiling? Where's the cap for player management and their involvement, in particular in the AFL system?
I think it's probably going to get more and more involved as it increases in terms of the trades, because they're pushing for a mid-season trade.
Yes.
Now. So they're saying 2025 will be the first mid-season trade potentially. If you have that, then you need your manager more on your side, and you need a manager with experience and someone that's been in the game for a while that's got a good relationship with clubs, because you need to be able to trade your player through relationships as well in those important moments. So I think they're going to need the player managers more and more. But I think at the same time, We're lucky to be in the industry and love working with the footy players and other athletes.
That you do? Do you really love it?
Yeah, no, I do. No, definitely. It's. I think, like you said early on in the podcast, is that you going through it myself is a big experience that I've been able to take forward, and through all my different experiences I've had in football and waffle and playing VFL and over in Victoria and being traded and going through the draft and being a high pick, I can pass that knowledge on to the young kids coming through and their families and guide them the best I can in terms of their journeys and hopefully give them the best advice on their careers.
A couple of quick fire ones for you. Have you ever nailed, watching a draft, the top 10 in order?
No. I think Cal Toomey goes well. I think he had 17 out of 20 last year.
He'll tell you it went well too.
Yeah,
don't worry about it. He rates himself. I'll tell you what, he's a good man and he knows his stuff.
He does.
When he speaks. And some their knowledge, him and Riley Beveridge and others, but those two are exceptional talents on young talent. Well, I'm going to ask you this question. Would you believe those two blokes could possibly go into the football system as talent scouts?
I think they could. Yeah, I think they've got enough knowledge to be able to do it. I think they enjoy being in the media space.
Yeah,
but
okay.
They've got a lot of experience. I think Cal sort of almost came up a similar time. I'm coming into my 11th year now, and Cal's probably a similar amount of time. So you see the guys progress, and it's good you build those relationships up over time. So
yeah, very impressive, both of them. Very, very impressive indeed. Cheeky one. Does Tim English and Rudy Ellis still own a place in WA?
Rudy Ellis does, yes.
Rudy Ellis... Just checking. Rightio, I'll park that there. Have you got your eye on a big fish that you want to manage? Is there someone out there that you are hell-bent?
Probably you, Goss.
I'm retirement stage. But is there someone out there in the footy space, no names, no pack drill, but is there someone out there that you go, we need to get this young man or young woman on our books?
Possibly, but I don't. There's probably, I think, more about the draft, to be honest. Look, you know, the players that I'd like to focus on is getting the best players in the draft every year. And, you know, if we got a number one draft pick, that'd be fantastic. We've signed Bo Allen this year, who's, there's two All Australian players from WA only. So we've got Bo, and he's one of those. And I think he will go quite well in the draft and quite high. So having the Colton Thorstrops and, you know, the Matt Johnsons and those ones are a key focus.
I'm going to ask you one final question, Andrew McDougall. All the hype and the unlimited back pages and the talk about Harley Reid, from your vantage point, is it real?
Talking to the West Coast players, they say that it is real. You know, like, he is a very, very good player already and fits into their system. And one of the boys said to me that he played 25 minutes in a scratch match, and the coach said, go, you know, 25 minutes as hard as you can. He kicked three goals from the middle and was palming players off. So I feel the hype is real, but I also feel there's a lot of pressure on him and he's handling it really well. But also everyone out there needs to realise he's a young kid and he will have games where he's a little bit down, and he'll probably have some highlights like the Nick Nat had in his early days. Like, he was phenomenal and then he had some lower games, but he's a talent that's going to be fantastic for the club and really exciting. It's going to be an exciting year to watch him.
There absolutely is no doubt about that. Thanks for coming in. We could chat all day. You tried to get into Channel 10 very briefly. Your dad, Murray, tried to get you into Channel 10 as a future, you know, TV reporter. I think you did a fair bit of work experience. So.
I came down and saw you and Lockie a few times.
Yeah.
You guys,
how'd that turn out?
You guys were flat out, so I was delivering coffees for you boys. It didn't work out too well.
Oh, I think you got better than us. Don't worry about that. Hey, mate, appreciate you coming in, having a chat. It is a remarkable story. Andrew McDougall, our inspiring sports story. Thanks, Dukes.
No worries, Goss. Thanks for having me in.
There it is. Thanks to Bowen today, because the little things are everything. Corporate Sports Australia, former player and a ripping young man and a big name inside the football sporting industry, Andrew McDougall. Inspiring sports stories, thanks to Barra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything.